This is a National Museum of Australia recording. For more information, visit nma.gov.au/audio.
My name is Jay Arthur and I'm part of the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander program here at the National Museum. And with my colleague Carolina Killian, we are working on an exhibition on Aboriginal civil rights. Of course, everyone knows what's going to be in that kind of exhibition. Oh, what's it going? That. Of course. Except for those of you who may have noticed the title of the exhibition and the date. The Aboriginal flag was developed in 1972. This is an exhibition of Aboriginal protest that has no red, black or yellow. It is also before the era of silk printed T-shirts and that kind of familiar protest material. We did have some material in our collection. We just chucked that out, start again. Let's start, say, with this item. That's a sticker to do with the Gurindji walk-off when Aboriginal stockmen from the Vestey's Wave Hill Station walked off in protest at their employment conditions. We also had two extremely important protest items. We'll talk about them later. But let's step back a bit. This exhibition came out of an ARC project. With Dr. Sue Taff from Monash University, the museum was one of the participants. It created a book, up there you'll see, and also a fantastic website, which our museum website hosts, which I recommend to you. Now, working with Sue gave us not only her wonderful scholarship — what curator would want more than a scholar who's been working for 10 years on the project? It enabled us to start our targeted collecting project on this rather forgotten and unknown story, with all her connections as well as her scholarships. And one of her connections led us to a rather miraculous survival. This is a banner from the 1940s. How many protest banners survive, let alone a protest banner from the 1940s, let alone a protest banner that done by famous activist Bill Onus, who of course is the father of the famous artist Lynn Onus? That was a curator's miracle. There was another one. There was an Aboriginal man who used to stand outside Australia House in London in the 1920s, protesting at the condition of Aboriginal people in Australia. We want to tell his story. No objects, not even a photo. And then someone listens to the radio. They hear his story. They think, wow, what a story. I must paint his portrait. And then I must donate it to a big country institution so they can show it. He used to wear skeletons sewn over his coat and a sign saying, "This is what the Australian government has done to my people." This is my third miracle object. This is the well-known bark petition from the people of Yirrkala protesting at mining in their country. There are actually four done, and ours is the most original and in the best condition. I went to pick it up. Nothing personal. I went to pick it up from the owner. The owner lived in Lincoln Close, Chapman. When I went to pick it up a couple of years ago, the houses on either side were blackened ruins. He'd stood on the roof of his house and saved his house and that petition, which is wrapped in a towel in the linen cupboard. This project has also enhanced some of our collections through loans of this exhibition. That's a poster from our collection for the 1967 referendum. In the exhibition will be the camera that took the photo. We know the person who took the photo, the circumstances that took it, and the reason he was interested in Indigenous affairs, because he was a Jewish refugee. We'll also have some little fragments of history. A little bit of ribbon. That meeting in 1970 was important because it was then that Aboriginal people said, "You've been running this organisation for us, but not by us. We want to take part and run this organisation." So Aboriginal people and their supporters put on red headbands to show support for Indigenous control of organisations. And that was the beginning, the change from the fight from civil rights to the fight for Indigenous rights. Now, as many takes you could put on this story of civil rights, and we've chosen to take the tack of looking at the individual activists who change things. So it becomes an exhibition about agents, not victims. So we brought in the NHC some wonderful items. This is Joe McGuinness, president of that federal council, and his Wharfie's Hook. There was a huge diversity of people who worked for civil rights from all kinds of backgrounds, and he was a Wharfie. Every Wharfie had their own hook. That's Stan Davey, a former Christian minister. And on that tape recorder, he recorded thousands of hours of testimony of discrimination. And Faith Bandler and her gloves. The famous worker for the 1967 referendum. And why the gloves? Because in the 50s and 60s, you wanted to protest, you frocked up. And you went to see, you went to meetings and you went to see parliamentarians, no T-shirts and long hair. And this is Shirley Andrews, another activist, who's not only an activist, but a dancer. Now, those T-shirts and badges often had slogans or statements or comments on them. Our objects are silent. How to give them voice? What we've done is embedded them in the context of quotes from those activists. This is Shirley, a plain-spoken woman, as you see. And this is the famous Yorta Yorta activist William Cooper and his comment. Look at the date, so sad. This is Charlie Perkins. And this is one of his comments when he was on the Freedom Ride, that group of Sydney University students who travelled around New South Wales in 1965, locating instances of segregation and discrimination. This is Jack Patton, another early activist. Of course, the 150th anniversary of British occupation. And Mary Bennett, another plain speaker, as you'll see. Now, because these objects aren't red, black and yellow, or they're not T-shirts or badges, they will, of course, be able to tell other stories in the museum at other occasions. Shirley Andrews was one of the founders of the National Folk Festival. Raj Nagi, who painted that portrait, is a Sikh Australian, and he said to me how important his Sikh religion was and also his personal experience of racism in Australia in his decision to paint that portrait. So we have a story of an ethnic community's relation to Aboriginal discrimination. Now finally we come to my favourite objects in the exhibition. The Bowra Theatre was one of the places targeted by the Freedom Ride because like most, probably most, certainly many Australian country cinemas, it's segregated. White people on the plush seats at the back, Aboriginal people on the wooden seats down the front. This is a story of the innocence of objects. Innocent but complicit. Because their familiar, harmless bodies act out this hidden and shameful story in our national narrative when we place them in exhibition context. In the exhibition, there'd be a row of wooden chairs and there'd be a row of plush chairs. And so those chairs will be able to tell us the story. The story of the pervasiveness of discrimination. In a country town, the swimming pool, the RSL club, the dress shop, the cafe, the cinema were all problematic places for Aboriginal residents of country towns. They'll talk about the way Aboriginal people with their bodies had to enact their own segregation by sitting on the wooden seat, not the plush seat. They tell the story of Australia as Alabama. Alabama without signage. No sign saying blacks here, whites here, but they are the signs. On that day in 1965, when the Freedom Ride came to Bowraville and they went to the Bowra Theatre, Mr. Raymond, the owner of the Bowraville Theatre, said to Charles Perkins, "I don't care if you're the Prime Minister of Australia. You can't sit in a white seat. Thank you.
Jane Cronorn from the Department of, or the Faculty of Art and Design, Monash University. I'd like to ask, regarding that exhibition, how was the discourse of the other received?
Explain a bit.
Oh, the narrative of the marginalised by people viewing that exhibition.
Well, exhibition. I should have said in the beginning that the exhibition, we work on the exhibition now, Caroline and I. Caroline and I are working on the exhibition as we speak. It opens in September here for about 5 months, and then it will tour Australia for a couple of years, so you'll be able to answer that question when you come to the exhibition.
Well, perhaps I could follow that then by saying, how do you... are you presenting it as a contestation of views that you see are held now, or a way of getting people to understand what happened in the past?
I think the story is located in the past. I think for a lot of Indigenous people, it will bring up present resonances. They will say... So when I came to write the conclusion, I thought, what do I say in the conclusion? Do I say, isn't it great? All that discrimination is gone? Of course not. A lot of Indigenous people looking at the stories have said, those quotes that I showed you, well, what's changed? What's changed? So it's quite difficult for us dealing with that situation without... You want to say something changed because some things did change. We don't have segregated cinemas. But there are plenty of other issues in which segregation and discrimination still occurs. So when I came to write the concluding panel of that exhibition, it was extraordinarily difficult.
It strikes me that developing the exhibition as a travelling exhibition itself has resonances with the Freedom Ride. And I wonder whether that's something that you've considered.
To be honest, not really, I guess, because the travelling part is organised by another section. But I guess what I'm more conscious of is making sure, as a national museum, we have representatives from around Australia. That's what we really want to make sure. If it goes to Western Australia, they say, oh, that's our story. We recognise that. I think living in Canberra, you forget the state preoccupation. The people go around looking for the Victorian bit or the New South Wales bit, they will respond much more. In the Canberra, we get a somewhat false view of national perspectives.
It's just a practical question. I was just wondering, where is the exhibition touring to?
Well, again, that's being resolved by the exhibition section who do the touring. As soon as the tour is ready, we'll go up on our website. Yeah, but... unfortunately, we don't know about that yet.
This would have enormous resonance, you know, especially in Western Australia and the Northern Territory, of course.
Yes, I think even in places where we think there wouldn't be much resonance, there's still a great deal of resonance. I was in Kempsey last year with a group of Aboriginal men, and they wanted... I'd gone off the motel, and they wanted to go to the RSL Club, and they got the RSL Club. It was closed. And they, as they turned away, some white blokes walked in, so...
Jay, thank you very much.
The National Museum of Australia in Canberra explores what it means to be Australian through our permanent galleries, exhibitions, public programs, and the National Historical Collection. Find out more about the museum at nma.gov.au or download more audio programs from nma.gov.au/audio.